Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
I'm recording my end of Irrational Fear on Gadigal land of the Eora Nation. Sovereignty was never ceded. We need a treaty. Let's start the show.
The following program contains medium coarse language and traces of nuts. Irrational Fear recommends listening by immature audiences. Comedians, experts, laughing at the world as it burns down around us. This is...
Are you ready?
A Rational Fear.
Tonight, Melbourne cancels the Commonwealth Games, claiming it's the Floriade of sports events. And it's the side hustle earning people up to $700 a week. It's called getting a job. And Xi Jinping rejects John Kerry for doing more on climate change, saying that in China, they don't call it global warming, they call it global Szechuan. It's the 21st of July, and with more indictments than President Trump, this is Irrational Fear.
This is Irrational Fear.
Welcome to Irrational Fear. I'm your host, former captain of the Matildas, Dan Illich, and this is the podcast that laughs at the most serious news. But this week, instead of a big show, we have a rational conversation with two special guests to talk about life, working, and living up to expectations when most of your world is in the spotlight. We've got two great brains with us. First of all, returning friend of the podcast, heart punk, heart nerd, it's the Johnny Rotten of activism, Grace Tame. Welcome, Grace.
G'day.
Oh, she's back. And we're recording this episode in the Batuta Advocate office, and they've got bung headphones, and you've got the bung headphone.
I really am the Johnny Rotten of activism. I wish you could see me now.
That was a great intro.
And if you read their bio, you'll find out they're a comedian and a model, but they're much, much more than that. Her father is not her favourite member of Monty Python. It's Camilla Cleese.
Cleese,
sorry. Oh, God. Sorry,
no,
Camilla. Oh, my
God. I'm only
Cleese
doing
like
that.
Cheese.
Cleese like cheese.
It was cheese. In fact.
Oh, my God.
They
changed
the H to an L, thank. I can't swear it, can I?
Yeah, you absolutely can.
Thank fucking God, yeah. Otherwise, I would have been Camilla Chloe Cheese.
Camilla Cheese. That would have been amazing and delicious.
So I hear.
Yeah. It's so great having both of you in here because you have similar but very different lives. You two are like best buddies, right?
Yes.
She's my little sister.
Yeah.
Literally.
in every regard.
Hey, are you a cheese
I
as
look
well?
Up to her, though, truly.
Well, yes, I'm.
So you're the big cheese and you're the little cheese.
Yeah, right. I'm 5'3" and Camilla is 6'1"
and a quarter.
Yes.
Because quarters matter when you're over 6 foot.
And dare I say, you guys know this, it's such a weird combo, right? No offense, but, you know, let's start with how you two met. Like, how did you become best buddies?
Well, I'm a comedian, and gosh, it must have been right when I started doing stand-up, I think, around that time. Grace was at one of my shows, and I know I sound like this, but I feel very English still at heart. Like, I grew up in the UK. And I tend to gravitate towards other people in the U.S. from other English-speaking countries. Who have a sense of humor, especially a dark one. And we chatted for quite a long time after the show, and then I think became friends on social media back when I actually checked social media. I kind of can't remember because it was almost 10 years ago at this point.
We became friends in 2014. I'm the one who has the memory like an idiot savant, emphasis on the idiot.
Yeah.
It's the autism
I have brain
thing.
Damage. So.
Oh, that's great. So are you Camilla's carer, Grace? Is this what's going on here?
Yeah, I've been calling her mom all morning. It's a very odd dynamic, but it works somehow.
I don't return the favor by calling her dad.
She calls me uncle.
That's a sign of respect.
Yeah. Or, yeah.
Yeah, no, we met in about February. See, here we go. February 2014.
Jesus Christ.
I know. This is Max. This is why my fiance Max doesn't
what
like
day
getting,
of the week?
Getting into arguments. No, I don't want to go there. no, we met at the back of an Italian restaurant called Petrini's, I think it was.
Actually, then it was a Thursday. That's when the Petrini show was on a
there
Thursday.
There you go. And yeah, my friend Hoseway and I from community college, we liked going to comedy gigs, local comedy gigs in Goleta, which is a suburb of Santa Barbara County. And we hit it off with Camilla. And like Camilla said, we became friends on social media afterwards to keep contact. And at the time, as a hobby, I mean, I've always done art as a hobby. My mom and I.
That's a strong word. I mean, a weak word for it.
Hobby. Yeah, I'm not really a hobbyist.
One of the best artists I've ever seen in my life.
If anyone's walked past a bookshop and seen the cover of Grace Tame's book, they would know exactly the kind of level of art you do, which is amazing.
That's very kind.
I do art as a hobby. I draw stick figures, and then there's Grace.
I do art as a hobby. I go around to dead bodies and put chalk around them. That's my skill, particular skill. No, it's tracing, really. It's tracing.
You shame former prime ministers into turning up to important global meetings.
Well, hey, someone's got to get a prime minister to do something somehow. So that's one thing.
This is also true.
For that hobby, you should live in the U.S. That's a lot. You'd have a lot more fun.
Yeah.
But back to it.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, that's okay. I ended up drawing a portrait of Camilla's dad because some of my biggest inspirations, and I've talked about this in my book, have been people who can make me laugh or creatively inspire me. And Python was a big influence on me. It was something that I connected with my father and my mother through. And, yeah, I drew a portrait of John, I think, at some point in 2014, like later in that year, and then we ended up connecting because Camilla saw it and she was like, "Oh, I've got to show
like
this."
Like once a year when I check Facebook, it just happened to pop up in my feed, and I was like, "Holy moly, that is amazing!" And
can you describe the picture for us, Camilla?
Well, the funny thing was to me that it looked like it was drawn from memory because I've seen all his PR photos a million times. When he's, you know, getting in trouble with the media and they just regurgitate them. And so I don't know if it was from a photo or not, but I didn't recognize it from a photo. And I was like, how on earth did she make it? It looked so real. I asked if you wanted to come down and go see the show in Pasadena, maybe?
I think it was Glendale. But this portrait came about because I'd been kicked out of my roommate and I had been kicked out of our apartment. And in the middle of our semester, as 19-year-olds, we'd wound up staying in a motel, and I'd started drawing that portrait. And I think I might have just like, because I was living overseas and Facebook at that time before it became, and before social media in general really descended into more of an ethical toilet that it is, generally speaking.
Toilet's too nice.
I did use it as a vehicle to keep my family at home updated with things that were going on. And it was really a positive message though, because, you know, like I mentioned before, you know, it was one of the things that I connected with positively was like Monty Python and stuff. And I think I just said something about that. I don't even know if I mentioned, like, I didn't even know at that point that your dad was coming to Los Angeles. And I do remember the
phone. I'm not sure. Did you even know that?
No.
He was my dad?
I did know that he was your dad, of course. I think I knew that he was your dad.
I guess Cleese isn't that common of a name. But, like, usually when people know so it's my dad, they bring it up right away and they're like, oh, my God.
You just posted to Facebook and, Camilla, you just found it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, out of my 4,000 or however, whatever the maximum limit of people that I don't know who they are that I'm friends with on Facebook.
Wow. And then how did you become friends? What was the first time? Well,
this is kind of funny.
What's the first time you both looked at each other and you thought, oh, we're good friends?
I mean, we're both a bit standoffish, I think, when we first meet people typically, or at least used to be. But we'd had a really good chat, and then I saw that, and I could tell she needed a little cheering up. It wasn't maybe the happiest post in the world, but I said, do you want to come to the show with me and, you know, you can come backstage and all that? Because I normally don't sit in the audience. Like, I can't sit through a comedy show. Are you kidding me?
No comedian can.
No.
We hate it. I mean, we're either standing in the back laughing or going, oh, I could have done that better.
Trying to, yeah, adding tags or whatever. And I remember after the show, you came backstage. Can I tell this part?
Yeah.
She was so nervous to meet. It, like, words were not coming out.
No.
And she was holding her sketchbook, and it was like, and
this is so strange, because people, anybody in Australia who knows who Grace Tame is.
I know, she's not intimidated by anybody.
She's a fierce, focused, powerful woman.
And it was so sweet. My dad did this thing, which I've actually never seen him do with anyone, where he like put his hands like this by his ears and kind of did jazz hands and was like, come on, do this with me, and made her do it. And I have a photo of it somewhere that maybe I'll sell to the papers at some point. Just kidding. I love you. And then at the end, I was like, so where are you staying? And she's like, I don't know. And I was like, how are you getting back to Santa Barbara? And she's like, oh, I don't know. And I'm like, okay. One for an adventure. It's about an hour and a half. She'd taken the train, but I think all the trains had left for the night, right?
Yeah. I was 19. I'd come with my backpack and my
sketchbook.
Did you
wind up staying at my place, or did I drive? What?
Well, after that, the next memory that I have is catching up again, and with respect to your privacy, we had a long chat, and that was where
I drove you home in the rain one night, and I don't remember where from. Or anything.
Yeah.
Oh my god, this sounds so romantic. This story.
Yeah, and you drove me home, and it was quite a long drive, and we sort of I shared my. Bit about my background with you.
And why you were in the US
and why,
and stuff.
Why I had moved to the US, why I had really kind of gotten away from home and the sort of small town mentality that I didn't want to be around at that time in my life, where I felt a bit, I guess, misunderstood, misrepresented, because it was a very different culture back then. You know, there was a lot of silence. There was a lot of misunderstanding. People just didn't talk openly about child sexual abuse. They really didn't get it. You know, like when I think about...
Well, and the gag order, right?
Well, there was that, but also just like that aside, I think perhaps people listening now who have, you know, maybe especially the younger generation, for whom it is very normal now to speak openly about their experiences, it just was not like that. It was not like that at all. We were speaking, and Camilla opened up to me about her like different experiences, different hardships that she'd been through, and we both realised we had this common thread of adversity that we both related to, albeit very differently. And I just
can
sort
I
of,
say one
yeah
one thing
you can say one thing
interject when she told me her story, I was like so blown away, because the bravery that it takes to come forward and put yourself in that position where you don't know how everyone's going to react, and especially even 10 years ago, it was so different from how it is now as far as the conversation and people talking about these things. But then to move to the U.S. by yourself at 18, with no money basically or family or, I was blown away by her bravery and just how smart she was, because – like, I always thought I was kind of smart, but then I was like, damn, maybe not. But I was just really impressed by her. And we sort of connected that night, I would say. I was like, this is someone that, even though I'm like a decade or more older, I think, she's so wise beyond her years. And
In some ways. In other ways, I have massive gaps.
It felt kind of serendipitous to find a friend that Grace has a very extensive knowledge of, you know, understanding psychology and mental health and stuff like that. And we kind of spoke the same language, I think, and understood some of the difficulties of being around people with those issues and stuff like that.
And now, you know, even what, 6 years later, 7 years later, Grace went through this incredible public transition. where
you transition?
Well, yeah, you know, like, you became a very public identity.
Well, that's been crazy.
You've lived a lot of your life, Camilla, in the spotlight. Well,
and that was another thing too. Like, she was always very astute and able to sort of empathize with, because it's, I get it. Like, my dad's famous and wealthy, and a lot of people, well, not that wealthy anymore because the divorces, but whatever.
There was that Dundee movie that didn't go very well.
It was that.
No, Pink Panther 2 really killed him. But she was able to sort of see the difficult sides of it, like, because it's not all rainbows and unicorns, and she's incredibly loyal and trustworthy too. Like, and there aren't many people like that, especially not in an industry like Hollywood.
When you saw Grace's profile rising, did you have advice for Grace when that was happening?
Even before she became Tasmanian and then Australian of the Year, you had, in a way, been in the public eye, even though you weren't technically identified, but you'd had this sort of rumor mill around you, I think, because of what happened.
That's a good way to put it.
Well, just a lot. I know, obviously, it happened, but, like, all the misinformation that people get, too. And then you have, like, that horrible woman, Bettina, whatever, that did the men's rights that was just sickening.
It's a good thing that you don't remember her name.
She was very, like, empathetic to the downsides of being in the shadow of my dad and being in the public eye. And much like her, I didn't actually choose it, you know. Like, I was born into it, and then she, like, it's obviously an amazing honor where it's not to be just born into it, but
I think that's a really important point.
Is that something you bonded over, like both your kind of spotlightishness?
I don't think so.
Not initially at all, because we knew each other for, what, 8 years, 7 years before?
Four, eight years, yeah. We lived together on and off for 5 years while I was in Los Angeles after I was in Santa Barbara for about 2 years.
All right, so you lived together for 5 years.
Yeah.
I want you both to tell me what's one thing that annoyed you both of each other while living together.
She was like the best. Nobody has ever been, A, so like appreciative, and also just did anything she could to help out. And like, she was the best. I'm sure I was a pain in the ass to live with. I mean, during that time, we got very close, obviously. And she's such a good friend and was so supportive and came to so many of my comedy shows when I first started, which, you know, looking back, I realized what a favor that is.
That's a big effort.
Yeah.
So you were paying rent by
turning up to comedy shows and deconstructing some jokes. Yeah.
Well, and she's hilarious. So
isn't she just the funniest?
We would sit
Grace. Sorry, do you mind us mutually gushing over you?
She's so uncomfortable. I love it. But, you know, I would start working on a premise and we'd, like, throw ideas around, especially things like cat puns.
See, there you go.
Indian
all of food. All of Camilla's jokes actually come from me. And Camilla, I'll tell you right now, I'm going to bust a myth about John Cleese. John Cleese, his joke writer, is actually Camilla.
Oh.
He's actually not that funny.
Boom.
I know this for a fact. Inside knowledge right here, massive headline. Here you go. I have been sitting on the couch and I have heard him take jokes right out of his daughter's mouth.
And put them on stage.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, but, I mean, I told him. Usually I was writing with or for him. My favorite.
Don't undercut yourself.
Okay, thank you.
Listen to your agent.
His daughter.
He did. He's making up for it now.
Seen it, witnessed it, been on tour, seen it all.
For the first three, first.
For the,
the first three tours, I got paid less than the teleprompter operator, which is kind of amazing.
You basically are the teleprompter.
Well, the one time they let me operate it, it didn't go very well. But I feel like I have to tell the story about when I commissioned you to do the Father's Day gift. I was like, why don't I get all commission Grace? And at the time, I didn't have much money. But I think I paid you a whopping like $300 to do this drawing of his cats. And it was supposed to just be a portrait of his cats. Uh-huh. But it turned into The Last Supper with like all of the characters from his career. And it was quite large.
Wow.
And it took like
7 weeks.
And when she said 7 weeks, it wasn't like a couple hours a day. It was like
all day, every day.
Yeah. And I still feel a bit guilty about that. But it was incredible.
It's all right. I'm not scrounging anymore.
But that's amazing. Well, so what characters did you include, Grace? What was on the list?
The drawing is actually 2 by 3 feet long. So it's quite a large
like CJ
drawing.
Hendry level of drawing.
And I draw in a style that's it's photorealistic or pretty close to real. This one's quite like if you look closer to it, this one's probably slightly more cartoonistic because I was making a recreation of The Last Supper that had all these different characters pulled from different times in history.
Yeah.
And the quality of the reference material varied significantly from piece to piece. Mm. And it also included pictures of cats. And those pictures of cats...
You mean disciples?
Yes. Okay. Yes, they're interchangeable in this case because of your dad's excessive love for his Maine Coons, which is borderline freakish.
Everyone knows he has cats and not kids, put it that way.
Oh, yeah. I'm so sorry.
No, he's taken them on television with him before. Yeah. Anyway, so I had to draw this outline and I remember your dad, while I was sketching in this really meticulous outline of all these different characters that from his canon of work that included Kevin Kline's character from A Fish Called Wanda, Otto. It had...
with Wanda hanging out of his mouth.
With Wanda hanging out of his mouth, so the little fish tail you could see protruding from his mouth.
I unreservedly apologize.
Yeah.
And Manuel was the waiter for the Last Supper.
Manuel was, of course, the waiter from Fawlty Towers. And the moose head was hanging above the actual dinner table. And then...
the Spanish Inquisition.
Yes, we had one of the members of the Spanish Inquisition was, to the left of the table. And then Brian, of course, made an appearance from The Life of Brian. And
naturally.
He fit in well at the Last
Supper. The lumberjack was there and...
The Grim Reaper.
The Grim Reaper, because, of course, how did everybody die when then the salmon moose was on the table? We had
a dead parrot.
Not the salmon moose.
The salmon moose.
I don't even know that sketch, which is the best part of it.
Okay, well, Dan and I can go toe-to-toe here, I'm sure.
I think it was an LP, yeah.
Yeah, we had Spam on the table. We had a dead parrot. There cheese was cheese plate. From the cheese shop.
That really shouldn't have been there,
I know, but it was it's a trick gag, right? So it's to catch people out. There was Mr. Creosote.
You're always going to have one wrong thing.
Yeah, there was
Well, also my dad's obsessed with cheese. So Christ, because my dad's not actually in it, but Jesus has a mustache and he's doing
it. Supposed to be him. Yeah. And he's got the same initials.
Yeah.
Of course.
Of JC.
Yeah.
Great. So... this took 7 weeks?
It took 7 weeks and it was done in July of... Yeah, it was done between July and August of 2016. And we presented it to him, I think, later that year, so later in 2016. And then sometime in 2017, your dad asked me... We had dinner before going to see, I think, Depeche Mode, because you're friends with Martin and Kerry Lee Gore. So yeah. Martin writes the lyrics for Depeche Mode, for those playing the home game who don't know that.
And sings some of them.
And sings a lot of the songs, yeah, of course. And Martin Gore, I'd also done a piece for Martin Gore by this stage, which was a number of...
One of my favourite things you ever did.
Yeah, a number of hands signing a lyric from one of their songs that said, "We are fucked." which was also a big piece. It was about the same size. It was about 2 by 3 feet that hangs above his piano. At his house, and we had dinner.
All different hands, different races, sizes, ages. It was really cool.
So
we went to dinner, and they had a lazy boy for my dad at the concert. And I was like, "Are you sure you want to go?" Because my dad, if you ask him what his favorite genre of music is, he'll say silent. And I was like, "Are you sure we want to do this?" Yes, I'd love to go.
And he left early, which is, but we had dinner beforehand, and he asked if we could sell they could sell the print of the Last Supper as merchandise for our tour.
Yeah,
of
the limited editions.
Yeah. there were several.
Did they end up doing that?
Yeah, they did. They did. So we did
a
run.
We gave you a cut, obviously, to make up for the measly payment in the first place.
So Grace, you went from living in your car to living with Camilla to making sweet advance, Monty Python merch money.
well, not really. They gave me
the merch
advance.
Money. Isn't that sweet? Especially when you have to mail them to us because they keep selling out every fucking tour date. So then we just had her come on tour. So she came on the tour bus with us.
I was paid in experiential souvenirs, Dan, and I don't have any beef with that. That's okay. I'm not chasing the big JC for my cash dollars. I was given an advance of about six grand US.
That's amazing.
Like that, which is heaps of
money.
That
is so much
money
at that time. That's great.
And honestly, I wasn't doing it for the cash.
Oh, of course.
I remember
we had so much fun on tour. She was my lifesaver because otherwise it's like me and my dad and like three grown men and I live in a hallway with them.
So, Camilla, tell me.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
What is the biggest misconception about your family, do you think?
I could probably tell you from the outside.
Sure, from the outside, yeah. What do you reckon, Grace?
The perception, the outward perception of people like your dad and even your mum, who was also, a stunning actress, which is definitely where Camilla got her looks from.
Thank you.
No offense, John. He's a a funny man.
Funny helps.
Yeah, it does. She got a height from. Your mum was quite tall though, as well.
She, 5'9" ish.
Yeah, I think.
For that generation, yeah.
Yeah, and I think a really an easy misconception or misperception of fame at that level. Relative wealth compared to the average individual is that those are protective measures against pain or, vulnerability, sadness.
Trauma.
Or any of those sort of negative experiences that one has as a human being. In life or instability or anything like that. And that's entirely not true. And in fact, in some cases, for different reasons, those things can be, and I don't want to sound like this is like a privileged thing, because privilege is also this very amorphous beast. Though some things can be burdensome, because when you achieve a certain level of recognition, say, whether there's financial gain attached to that or not, when you become recognizable, people gravitate towards you, and that can be nice. However, it can also be very scary, especially if you are a vulnerable person and especially if you are an empathetic person, because an individual only has a limited well of selfhood and they need to preserve a degree of that for themselves in order to survive. And I have seen in time that I was with Camilla, and often people would, you know, come and go sometimes in the second house that I lived with her in. And there was almost just this, it's like different standard of treatment that people thought that they could treat both her and John like, and that they could take more than they gave. And there was like, and it was mind blowing. Mm. But, and again, to a smaller scale, I also remembered how, you know, people treated me and my mother slightly differently when my mother read news and things like that. And I always had that at the back of my mind though as well. And like, I certainly didn't have anywhere near that level. But also I think a lot of people assumed that my life was a lot more privileged than it was, and that I had some exorbitant amount of money or something like that. And so I could relate in some way. But also I've just always had an understanding that life is so much more complicated than meets the eye, whatever the circumstances are. And there is a need to see that, you know, pain and vulnerability are human experiences, and nobody is protected against those things, no matter what their circumstances are.
Mm. Well, I think you articulated that pretty beautifully, but also an aspect where, especially living in Hollywood and working in the industry, there's going to be a lot of people with ulterior motives. There's a lot of people that want things. I mean, we used to sometimes crack up. I would open up my Facebook. That's part of what put me off social media, because I would get messages like, "Hey, do you think your dad would star in my web series?" And I'm like, I'd want to be like, "Well, what's your budget? Are you going to fly him over from the UK and put him up at the Four Seasons? And or do you think it's so good that he's going to fly himself over just to appear in it?" And part of me like almost envies that level of confidence or delusional confidence, because it's like, I'm terrified to ask for anything because I don't want to be that person, you know, even though I'm not that person. But there was always people. I mean, I've had people where I've had three or four meetings with them thinking that they were interested in me being a part of their project. Yeah. And then I find out they were just trying to get to my dad. And I want to be like, why the fuck did you waste my time? Like, just if you wanted my dad, ask for it. I'm going to say no, but
like, and they'll treat like you differently or your dad differently or something like that, and they can't just like speak to you the same way or something. Like, you know, like John and I, for example, like John's like a lot like my father, and he can be really difficult, and I've witnessed him be really difficult. And like, some people just won't call him out on that, and then that
most
like,
that's, almost all
almost all, and like they won't, so like, you know, they won't.
Don't get me wrong. I love him, and he's a great man. But it changes you too. Like, the more that people don't call you out on it, it's harder to keep things in perspective sometimes.
And like, they won't back in. Like, you know, like there was like the other day that like I knew that Camilla needed backing in about a work thing, and so I was like, all right, I'll back her in because she's my friend.
I don't know what that means.
Oh, like
support.
Yeah, back you up. Is that an Australian term?
Well, maybe. Yeah.
Is it back you in?
Back him in, yeah.
I back him parking places.
Back you up, back you in.
Grace needed you to – Grace thought that you needed someone beeping loudly behind you.
Yeah.
That's what she was there to be beep.
Beep, beep, beep.
Are you saying I'm a wide load?
Maybe dangerous goods.
That tall load.
Perhaps, yes, absolutely. Long.
Flammable, yeah. Flammable.
Long load.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you went into bat for Camilla?
Went into bat, yeah. Just, it was like, I don't know.
Now, went into bat is a thing we say in
Australia. Do you say that? Well, going to bat?
Like fruit bats?
Yes.
Yeah. It's more of a cricket reference.
See, yes.
No, I do understand. Like, I can infer what that means just from the analogy. Yeah. Whereas the backing up one, I'm still trying to wrap my head around. But no, she's always been a great friend like that and not intimidated by anyone or the fame or anything. And
so around the Cleese household?
There's no house.
There's no house.
Oh, sorry. Around the Cleese unit.
Various.
Are you the bullshit caller, Grace? Would you call yourself the bullshit caller?
Oh, I think it depends on the day.
It depends on the, I mean,
we've all called bullshit.
I mean, I know
we've
how
all,
hard,
we've
I know
all,
how
we've
hard
all
it
called
is
bullshit
to...
on each other, I think, at times, and I think that's important.
Yeah.
My dad's quadriplegic, and he gets away with a lot.
Oh, wow.
He gets away with a lot. So he...
He would, wouldn't he?
He is so rude and... facetious,
yeah.
Which is funny at times. He can be very funny being facetious, but sometimes he's just so rude to folks around him. I find it difficult to call him out, and he's my dad.
Yeah,
I find it difficult to call him out, not because he's quadriplegic, but because he's my dad. And I know someone like I feel like
that's
I though. Should actually be the guy that goes, "Actually, Dad, the way you spoke to that person was unacceptable. You should apologize."
Well,
but I find it so difficult.
There is kind of a. There's a slight similarity, I think, because people tiptoe around my dad and they don't tell him the truth and stuff like that. And unfortunately, like, he's really a great man, a good-hearted man. But, like, over the course of years, if you don't have anyone telling you that you're wrong or you can't do that or you can't behave that way, like, it does change you. Yeah. Because – and he's surrounded by a lot of sycophants a lot of the time. And I think – all things considered, he's very grounded, but like it would change anyone. How could it not, you know? But it is a little frustrating at times because sometimes I'll vocalize that, you know, I don't agree with him or that he's doing something and I'm waiting for someone to back me up. And unless Grace happens to be in the room, like everyone's like, oh, I don't know. I think maybe, you know, and then I just look like the idiot. I mean, and then they'll be like, no, I so agreed with you, but I didn't want to say anything. And I'm like, he's not.
You can see it happening, the dynamics play out that nobody wants to rise to the occasion and challenge him in person.
Yeah.
But they're happy to say after the fact that they agreed that, you know,
that
they disagreed with John. And it's really frustrating
me feel like I'm insane sometimes because...
Do you ever call those people? You're like, where were you? Why didn't you back me up? Why didn't you go into bat for me? I know none of that makes sense to you.
Why didn't you back in the truck with me? Why didn't you do the beep beeps?
What? There's no one beep. Cat Grace beeps with me. None of you beep.
I scratched my bumper for fuck's sake. Like, and it's funny because on the whole, when we work together, it's so easy going and probably because he like beat in comedy education into me for my entire life. He didn't beat it. It was more osmosis, I suppose.
Sure.
But sometimes hanging out with him feels like a beating.
Did you feel pressure to have to do comedy because?
No, I never wanted to go into comedy. I always loved comedy, but I always shied away from it because I didn't want to be in his shadow. I hated the fame aspect of it because long before I ever went into comedy or modeling before that or any of it, I was already getting trolled all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I couldn't really tell you why, but like there's just an inherent
Brilliant.
Preconceived notions, I suppose, about what kids of celebrities are like or kids of wealthy people, whatever. And look, honestly, a lot of them fucking suck. I know a lot of them. But I think you go one of two ways. Either you're hyper aware that whatever you have, you didn't earn yourself and that some – like I never felt like I deserved a lot of it and it was sort of an uncomfortable feeling – and then some of them just are super entitled and think that they deserve everything.
There's like different levels of Nepo baby.
Yeah. Well, thank you for calling me that. But Nepo middle age.
It was a joke from the roast last night.
Oh,
that I wrote,
that right?
Actually. I told my dad to call me an aspiring Nepo baby because I'm not even like winning at it, you know. His cats are doing better.
Oh, God.
But didn't he pronounce it Nepo Baby?
He did. He said
Nepo Baby.
He said Nepo Baby.
Okay. All right.
He's not up with the lingos.
No. But the other interesting thing, which I think you were sort of touching upon, is like, I think everyone to some degree has their parents on a pedestal when you're growing up, because you think adults are like have it all figured out when you're a kid. And of course you want them to love you and you want to make them proud and all that. But like when the entire world has your dad on a pedestal, it's very hard to then reconcile his humanity in some ways.
I think that's a great way to put it. How to reconcile their humanity, because the public only see the cream on top, and they don't deal with anything else down the bottom. And the same goes for when people see, you know, like the highlight reel of social media or the highlight reel of a mainstream media narrative that runs for a long time. What is the everyday reality for anyone who lives in the public eye is, you know, it's both good and bad because, you know, life is, you know, like you know, Carl Jung said, like we need the good and the bad, we need the dark and the light kind of thing. It's important to be able to have any concept needs a counter concept to have perspective. But, yeah, you just like the majority is some of it's just really banal and other stuff's really difficult.
So for both of you, how do you stay true to yourselves and your values in this environment where public is so overwhelming, public scrutiny? Like, how do you keep that North Star?
I mean, I try not to look at comments because people are – I mean, there was an entire Facebook group dedicated to hating me for a very specific and reason.
You've brought this up a lot. Have you separated yourself from social media? Do you have someone looking after your social media or do you
– No, I just – I mean, I use it to the extent that I need to. I just recognized, especially in more recent years and after they announced that we were going to do another season of Fawlty Towers and everyone just went ballistic and like decided that we were going to ruin the original two seasons, which is – it's like just wait for it to come out. It's a completely different show.
24 episodes. Forget it. You know, yeah. Come on. You can make more.
It's
– There were only 12, weren't they?
Was it 12?
Yep. Yeah. I think so. But look, it's a completely different show. The only carryover is Basil basically and then – That's that. But then I get all the Nepo Baby and the this and that. I'm like, I have actually been working in comedy for 16 years. and I've worked my butt off. And my dad hasn't exactly thrown me a lot of bones, if you will. Don't get me wrong. I got to learn from him and work with him, which is priceless. But, like, my sister got two movies.
You've done the work. You've done the absolute work.
I've seen it in – Yeah, I've seen the years and years and years of it. I've also seen John thwart.
So
he likes me to be available.
Yes.
So, Grace, what about you? How do you stay true under overwhelming scrutiny? You also get insane comments. You're off Twitter now, which is great because that's a horrible place.
Oh, interestingly, also, I mean, I was being trolled as a child too. I was being trolled by Murdoch. First headline that came out about me was teacher admits to affair with student. I mean, by the king of the trolls himself.
Is there a framework you both go to? Like, do you have like a list of rules in your head?
I isolate and then I have to stop isolating because it's not healthy. But it's hard. Like, I'm lucky. I have a very supportive partner, and who's experienced some of the same stuff. But that it's good to have someone that recognizes if I'm going to a dark place or whatever. But like, I just surround myself with a very small group of people who are amazing people. I can't always surround myself with them, but like, whenever I call Grace, I think our average phone call is like 4.5 hours. just catching up. And it's not very often because I'm on, especially since the pandemic, I think both of us were on the phone and on Zoom so much now compared to what we used to be. But like it never feels like we've missed a beat, and there are more things in some ways now. I remember you calling me when you first won Australian of the Year, and you're like, "Oh my God, I get it!" Now. Like all of the, like
the bullshit,
the bullshit, and the fake people, and just how much. What makes me really sad is how much negativity there is. Like, I think it's gotten a lot worse. The trolling, just in general. I think people during the pandemic were at home and depressed and angry or frustrated, and they were looking for an outlet, and social media is a really easy place to misdirect your anger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, the trolling, if you will, that I or we have received, when I say we, I mean my family, my mother is included in that, my current fiancé is included in that, and he's been really at the forefront of the, like, of interfacing with it, because he was previously responding to the emails for the Grace Chain Foundation. Mm-hmm. And especially throughout last year, we received a proliferation of networked abuse. That's what I would call it. I would call it networked abuse because a lot of it followed the same pattern. A lot of it was the same sort of subject material. A lot of that content followed the same pattern, and it's stuff that we have been receiving for over a decade since I was a child, and I reported quite a significant amount of it to police.
So is there a framework you use to kind of...
framework that I use,
to stay focused and, like, be hopeful for the future?
Yeah, yeah, of course. I mean, I think that simplicity is one of the most overlooked and underrated commodities in the modern age, and I said that in the prologue of my book, and I stand by it. I've got two lines from T.S. Eliot's poem, Four Quartets, tattooed on my neck for a reason. It just says complete simplicity, and I stand by just appreciating the outdoors, appreciating authentic natural values, so staying offline as much as possible, because that really isn't the real world. So, you know, while we should appreciate some of the ways that technology allows us to connect. I mean, we're using technology right now, and these are some of the good things about technology. We can communicate with people who aren't with us, you know, especially our loved ones overseas, who might be traveling or away from us. That's amazing. It's also a great communicative tool and educative tool. But really, that inner world that we have, and our private worlds that we have with our key relationships, they should be kept, I think, for the most part, offline and grounded in reality, grounded in the outdoors, grounded in good food, whole foods, and in just sort of simple pleasures. And whatever they are for you, in exercise and things like that. I think there's a lot to be said for just key pillars like that, in having good conversations with your friends, you know, where possible, face-to-face, and sharing time with family over a good meal, listening to music.
Text threads of puns, like...
Yeah, or actually, if you must go on your
cats, go.
If you must use your high speed device, may it be for the purpose of a pun war.
Yeah.
Best puns you've seen lately?
I don't know. We do them all the time.
So many. I mean, we used to have these, like, chains that would go on, and it would be random subjects.
Bottomless pun chains.
Yeah, but we'd have a subject, like... Indian food and cats, go. And, yeah.
Keeping your friends close, keeping the conversations going.
And light.
Touching grass. Touching grass, you know, that's the phrase, right?
I tried to keep that bong photo out of the...
Not smoking grass, Grace. Okay. Always on the mind.
I think being, you know... Meditation helps me when I remember to do it, which is...
You meditate?
I do. Oh,
okay.
I mean, only for like 5 minutes at a time, because sure. That's as much as I can handle. But even just that little bit, like to center myself and to... Like I noticed the more I'm on social media, the more depressed I get. So yeah. I try to stay away from it. I have to do it as part of my job now. Unfortunately, I think it's helped me back comedy-wise because they want social media numbers. And yeah. I just – it doesn't feel right to me. It doesn't feel comfortable.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm not posting naked selfies to get followers so that I can headline a club. That just seems so backwards. I think that's more of an American thing. But
yeah. It's American female thing. I don't know if it would go so well if you were a man.
Yeah.
Plus, I'm a bit old now. But I think also just like – keeping the things you want private, private, like not putting everything out there. And, but all the things Grace said, I think she's better at them than I am. But having a self-awareness and always like trying to work through those things is important.
Keeping a line of creativity
that's
open,
a big one.
And,
yeah.
and that might take a different form depending on what brings you joy and what avenues of creativity you are able to access or you know.
I started drawing again recently, and it's been really helpful for all the other areas of my life because I can lose myself in that in a way that I can't if I'm, like, playing games on my phone or reading a book for some reason. So,
a comedian who draws part-time, and we have a wonderful artist who does comedy part-time.
There you go. Yeah, there's the symbiosis there. Make a little...
Well, I think all creative things, it's like this creative muscle that you have. And sometimes when I'm drawing, I come up with my best ideas for other work projects, you know?
Well, can I say, this has been like reading an article in The Good Weekend, like the two of us, you know that column? This is like the two of us.
It's like twins.
It's been an absolute privilege.
I'm Danny DeVito.
You are? I wanted to be Arnold. Danny DeVito.
I could probably do the best Arnold impression of the two of us.
I can do an impression. So.
Well, it's the end of the show. We do our plugs. Do you want to do your plugs in your Arnold impression? What would you like to plug?
I don't know.
Plug Gold's Gym, maybe?
Larry.
In Venice Beach.
Do we have Gold's Gym here? I don't know.
I think we've got one in Darlinghurst, not far away.
Okay.
I will say, she does an amazing American accent, which is not easy for most people to do if they're not American.
Well, now you've said it.
Oh, my God.
Like, yeah.
Folks, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure and a privilege to sit down with two great friends who were struggling for an hour or so to remember dates and times. That was probably my favorite
part. Oh, she
wasn't.
I remember, actually, at the beginning, you're right, I did struggle, and that's riff.
I think this has been a great listen for folks interested in creativity, friendship, and how to stay grounded in the face of adversity. So thank you so much for sharing such an incredible story about an unlikely friendship.
We've never talked about that. It's kind of funny.
It's actually, it's true. We haven't because usually people are like, tell us about John. Or tell us about how you know John Cleese. And then I derail and I'm like, Camilla is a great comedian in her own right. And I know Camilla Cleese. And they're like, yeah, but tell us about John. And I'm like, fuck off.
He keeps the thermostat on the tour bus at 84 degrees. I don't know what that is in Celsius. What is it, like 20 something?
Before we wrap up, is there anything else you want to add?
And he doesn't refrigerate his smelly cheese in the 84 degree heat. And when you're living on a bus with five people and there's cheese and it's 84 degrees, it's very hard. The struggle is real, kids.
Yeah.
Sorry. Camilla
is definitely funnier than John Cleese.
I love you for
truth
saying
bomb.
That.
It's We're definitely leaving
that,
true.
Leaving Irrational Fear on that truth bomb. Camilla Cleese is the real Cleese.
She is. She's
I'm the Cleese behind the curtain.
She is the Cleese behind the curtain.
Camilla, you should change your name to Cheese and, you know, get the show on the road.
Yeah, but I already get called Cheesy, so...
Big thank you to Road Mics, Australian Ethical, our Patreon supporters, Jacob Round on the Tepid Yaki Timeline. Also, big thank you to Diamantia Podcasts, home of the Batuta Advocate, who have allowed us to record in their studio today.
It's thank a lovely you. Studio.
It's a beautiful studio. I need one like it. And big thank you to Grace Tame and Camilla Cleese. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.